wanted to talk a little bit about an issue that I did speak about last year. I'm not sure how much I'm going to add. I know there's at least something I want to talk about, which I didn't talk about last year. But even if I said nothing new, I think that it needs to be said for the record again. Last year, some of you remember I spoke about, I think it was the Ice Bucket Challenge only a year ago?
That was the beginning of last year.
Right, so I spoke about it, but I wanted to address the issue of tzedakah generally. For some reason, several cases recently from several different people, some one who was my student, a couple people who are not my students who send me shaylas, asked me the question about ma'aser k'safim. How do you calculate ma'aser k'safim, and so on and so forth. Do you count this, do you count that? And I wanted to talk about, again, the mitzvah of tzedakah, because it's a really important mitzvah. It's actually, there are hilchos tzedakah, and it is rarely spoken about. For some reason, I don't think anybody educates children about hilchos tzedakah. They might have them bring in tzedakah to put a few pennies in the pushka, which is nice from one vantage point, but it doesn't sort of address the larger philosophical and hashkafic framework that needs to be spoken about. And somehow it never gets discussed, and some people don't pick it up in the home either, the way I think most people tend to work today. Is children are not privy to their parents' finances, and therefore they don't necessarily realize either that even when parents are big balei tzedakah and are giving meiser or chomesh k'safim, that children don't even necessarily realize it, which is good from the perspective of tznius, but bad from the perspective of chinuch. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this mitzvah, both a little bit from a halachic perspective, but more from a values perspective. Just very briefly, I'm asked the question, what is the halacha in terms of ma'aser k'safim and this and that? So first you have to talk about what is the halacha in terms of how much tzedakah you have to give. The absolute minimum of tzedakah that even an Oni Shebi Yisrael has to give is a shlishis ha-shekel. Ma'aser k'safim is not, it's not a chiyuv, you're chayiv to give tzedakah a certain amount. You're chayiv to give when an ani asks you, when a person is really an ani, to give at least the matana katana. And ma'aser k'safim, interesting enough, is considered a mid beinunis. The ideal shear of tzedakah is 20%. It's a chomesh. That shear is also a maximum. Be'usha hiskinu hamavazbeis ayivazbeis yosem echomesh. When a person dies, that may be a different story. There's a discussion how much a person, you know, is appropriate to give away for tzedakah, and how much should be taking away from the yorshim and so on and so forth. But for the moment, we'll talk about people who are b'chayim. So the ideal, the truly ideal share of tzedakah is 1/5 of one's nechasim. I think it's well known that the first year from the keren, the rest of the year is only from the peiros. From our vantage point, if you work and earn a salary or make money in business, so it's your profits or your income. That is what you want, ideally would give up to a chomesh, and a chomesh, but not more than a chomesh. But that's the shear. A tenth is considered a mida beinonis. A lot of people have latched on to the ma'aser k'safim. It's a very good idea. If all from Jews were able to give ma'aser k'safim and give ma'aser k'safim, we would not have very many financial problems in our community. So halavai, people should give ma'aser. One can only perform the mitzvah of ma'aser k'safim, of giving tzedakah, that amount of money, if one can afford to do so. Chayecha v'chayecha v'ercha chayecha kodman. If a person can't afford to pay for their basic expenses and the things that they have to pay for, then they can't do ma'aser k'safim. That's just the way it is. It's not a question of making cheshbonos. So if you can't afford to give it, it's just not a choice. Shlishis ha-shekel is an absolute minimum, but ma'aser k'safim, in that sense, is not a minimum. It's a mida beinunis, but if a person can't afford to do so, that's a general klal, that one is not chayev to do so. People often ask, well, does tuition count towards it? And I find it to be very disturbing, minimally from a shkafic perspective, not from a halachic perspective, which is that, number one, if people were to discount their tuition, yeshiva tuition, from their ma'aser k'safim or chomesh k'safim, nobody would give any tzedakah otherwise. And most people would give tzedakah otherwise, because for most people, unfortunately, the way things work, the burden of yeshiva tuition is so great that there wouldn't be room for other tzedakah. But number two, I think that it sends a very bad message about yeshiva tuition. Yeshiva tuition is not this, what I'll call, nidvas halev. It's an obligation. It's an obligation to mechanech one's children. One should not be attempting to be mavriach nechasav from yeshiva tuition. But when you view yeshiva tuition as counting towards my tzedakah allotment, and tzedakah, on some level, there's a degree of optionality within tzedakah, there's no degree of optionality within yeshiva tuition. And there are people who have very bad attitudes. There are the people who can't afford, but they want to spend on other things. They play all sorts of games to pretend they don't have money. I know people who, before their kids reach the age where they're going to be paying yeshiva tuition bills, they want to make sure to do all their house renovations so that by the time it comes to the tzedakah, you know, the scholarship committee, they actually won't have the money. People engage in all sorts of shenanigans, which sort of suggest a fundamentally defective attitude underlying it. That's not with regards to tzedakah per se, with regards to yeshiva tuition, but it needs to be said. This is one of the most important things that a person invests in one's child, and this is not to be viewed as some optional thing that, you know, if I can sort of escape from, great. Said one is chayv to do so, and it takes priority over all sorts of other things, like vacations and luxuries and all sorts of things of that nature. But I think also, just from the perspective of mitzvah tzedakah, there won't be tzedakah without that, and I'm not convinced from a halachic level that one, in fact, can deduct such a thing. But I'm not even going to get into that question. There is, however, sort of a larger problem. There is a larger problem. And it has to do with the way people relate to their property and to their assets. The Torah in Parshas Ekev warns us, Moshe Rabbeinu understood quite well the danger of what was to come of prosperity. And so on. And then, there are a lot of people who earn money in a job, in business, whatever it is, who work with an assumption that and that the money belongs to them. And in the process, they forget the Ribbono Shel Olam. They forget, ki hu ano sein lacha koach lasos chayel. It's not your own. And even if you worked hard, guess what? There are a lot of other people who work hard in this world and don't have the same mazel. Because they don't have the same background, the same opportunities, because of the luck of the draw, because they come from a disadvantaged background, whatever it is, who work just as hard and are just as deserving, and yet they don't get that money. It's the way it is. It's not kochi v'otzem yadi asali esachayel azeh. It's ki hu ano sein lecha koach lasos chayel. And that has an implication, which is what the Tur says to open Hilchos Tzedakah. The Tur writes at the beginning of Hilchos Tzedakah, it's a very powerful introduction, but one of the things that he says is that a person shouldn't be stingy when it comes to giving tzedakah and say, Eich sar mi mamoni, how can I be chaser from my mamon? Because, he says, you have to understand that your money is a pikadon. The Bala Pikadon gave you this money, and when you're given a Pikadon, and then the Bala Pikadon tells you, distribute the funds this way, distribute the funds that way. And when you're just an executor, when you're a trustee, and you're told to distribute the funds, you don't have a sense of kamtzanus, of stinginess, of like, how can I get away from my money? Because it's not your money. So the Torah says the same thing is true here. The money is not your money. When the Ribbono Shel Olam gave you a Pikadon, he entrusted you with it. If he told you to give X to tzedakah, so you don't feel bad when doing so, because it's not yours. You were told to do this with the money. You were also told that you could spend the other money on the rest of the money on your own needs. Fine. But that's out of the generosity of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But that's not yours. And if your attitude is that the money comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's much easier to be kind of the mitzvah tzedakah, because you don't feel like you're giving away something that belongs to you. You understand that when you earn money, it's not that I'm giving away from my hard-earned money. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave me the money. He told me to do X with it, so that's what I do with it. It's rather unfortunate that, as I suggested at the beginning, Hilchos Tzedakah is never taught. You know, there's a joke that they say that if only Lo Tignovu were a footnote in the Mishneh Berurah, more Jews would observe it. I think maybe if more people realized that Hilchos Tzedakah is in Yeredeya, which is Isser V'Heter, and not in Choshen Mishpat, which is Dina Mamonos, maybe more people would be machbit to study Hilchos Tzedakah and to fulfill Hilchos Tzedakah. But unfortunately, people don't know that it's in Yeredeya. Not that you don't have to observe Choshen Mishpat either, by the way. But some people think that there are only three halakim in Shulchan Aruch. Some people think there are only two or fewer. But bottom line is that it's in Yeredeya. It's Isser V'Heter. There are a few issues that I think that should be addressed in terms of Hilchos Tzedakah. I don't intend to go on. I could go on for a long time now, but time is short. Firstly, what is tzedakah directed to? It's directed to two primary causes, aniyim and mostos. The Beis HaKnesses, yeshivos, that was also considered part of tzedakah. There's a famous Yerushalmi about this, about discussions of what were the right priorities and whether the edifice complex was such a good thing when it came to building certain kinds of buildings. But fundamentally speaking, mostos and aniyim are the two primary areas of Hilchos Tzedakah. Local charities are supposed to take priority. Rav Schechter, and I don't know that there's a real solid basis for this shiur, but it's good guidelines everybody should follow, said in one of his public shiurim that people should make sure that I think 80% or something like that of tzedakah should remain within the community. I remember when one of the local yeshivas was being built, that one of the people in charge complained that if only they built the yeshiva in the West Bank, it would have been no problems raising money. That somehow people are willing to send oodles and oodles of money for, but your mechuyav to give first to and the same thing is true for most of those. Your community's needs take precedence. If your yeshivas and your communities are not sufficiently funded, if there are people struggling to pay, and you paid, but you can give more, before you give to yeshiva in place X, Y, and Z, first priority goes to the yeshivas in your community, the day schools, the high schools, YU, which is the yeshiva in our community. That takes priority over, I'm not going to name places, you can pick whatever place you want. It takes precedence over other yeshivas. Eretz Yisrael takes precedence over Shaar Ratzos, but not over your community. Your community comes first. It doesn't mean you have to give every penny there, but it means the bulk of one's tzedakah should be distributed to local needs. Aniyei Ircha, Aniyei Acheres, Aniyei Ircha Kodman. But the Beis HaKnesses, this shouldn't be a problem, but apparently it is a problem, and one particular issue, and Rabbi Schwartz didn't ask me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, it's a big problem across the Heights and Mount Sinai. Apparently there are a lot of young people, married or not married, I don't know, both categories, one category, the other category, who daven in the shul on a regular basis, and they don't contribute financially. Now, there may be a few people who are really strapped to the bone, and if you can't contribute financially, typically in those cases, there are other ways of contributing in a real quantifiable way in terms of time given over to the shul. But most people are able to contribute financially in some way. Now, students or people just married may not have the same kinds of resources, but you can contribute something to the shul. You daven in a Beis Knesses. You take advantage of the program in the Beis Knesses minimally. If you just daven there, you need the lights and the heating and the air conditioning. What's the havamina that you don't become a member of the shul? When a person can't afford, shuls typically will say you give what you can. But if you have cable television, or you have more than a minimal cell phone plan that you don't need for your parnasa for work, and you're not contributing to the shul, that's inexcusable. You cannot spend on things that are that are discretionary until you fulfilled your obligations. And if that means to your Beis Knesses, if it means to your local mikvah, if it means to your children's yeshivas or to the yeshivas of your community, that comes first. Before you spend on luxuries, before you take vacations or for even the luxuries that exist on a day-to-day basis. Rav Lichtenstein once observed, I think it's relevant to transfer the context. He pointed out that in terms of the exact assignment of Hilchos, of where your tzedakah money goes, the halacha doesn't give, it gives general guidelines, not precise guidelines. But that's not a kula, that's a chumrah. It's not a kula that now I can do what I want, it's a chumrah because now it becomes your responsibility to choose very carefully. If the halacha laid out an exact guideline for you, it'd be easy. You just follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. But here, you have general guidelines, you have to make a decision. There's a story that was told about Rosh Shlomo Zalman, about, I guess, a Talmud of his, who had inherited a lot of money, and he asked Rosh Shlomo Zalman where he should give his Ma'aser Kesafim to. And apparently the response was, if the Ribbono Shlomo had wanted me to decide, he would have given me the money. Right? But that's not a kula again, that's a chumrah. You have to make wise decisions. And the same thing is true in terms of figuring out what is a luxury and what is a necessity. There are things that are necessities that you cannot afford to be without, even if it's not for breathing and for eating and for drinking and for having a roof over your head. But nonetheless, one who is not contributing better think very carefully in terms of whether or not all the money that they're spending is truly mandatory or whether it's discretionary. I think that part of the problem is the translation of the word tzedakah. The translation of the word tzedakah is incorrect. It's usually given as charity. From the Latin caritas, which implies the goodwill of a person. Tzedakah is not about goodwill. It's not about a nediva slave of the voluntary spirit. Tzedakah's root is tzedek. Tzedek is justice, not charity. Tzedakah is fundamental obligation. It's about the way we live our lives. And as a community, common issue, it's a very serious problem. I wanted to spend last couple of minutes, and this is not given from the vantage point of, I'll call it Das Torah, of, you know, this is how we solve the crisis. But I want to just make an observation about yeshiva tuition. People talk about the tuition crisis, and many have said it's not a tuition crisis, it's a values crisis. The statement is partially true and partially not true. There are a lot of people who struggle to pay tuition in our community. There are a lot of people who, before they're paying it, it is so daunting and intimidating for good reason. For them, it's not a values crisis. For those people, even if they stripped away every luxury in their life, and even if they ate pasta and canned tuna every night for dinner, every dinner of the week and every lunch and so on, they still can't afford to pay the yeshiva tuition. That's not a values crisis. There are people. There are the legendary stories. You know, my favorite one of the husband and wife where they had to produce income taxes because they were asking for scholarship, and the husband produced, they filed separately, produced his income tax return, and they said, where's your wife? And he said, oh, no, that's for discretionary spending. It's like, surely you must be kidding me. Or the stories of the people who drive up to the meeting with the scholarship committee in their Lexus, right? Clearly, so there are people who don't understand that before you have any of these luxuries, it's not a burden, yeshiva tuition. It's an obligation, because that is the way we desire to live our lives. That's how we desire to transmit our values to our children. So for certain people, it may be a values in that sense. But there is a larger values issue. There is a simple way, in principle, to fund the yeshivas in our day schools. It's very simple and it's very affordable. It's the same way we fund our public schools. You know why public school tuition is not oppressive for people? But why are the taxes not so oppressive? If you look what taxes people pay, it's not that the taxes are so oppressive. It's because you pay a certain amount per year, which is not, if you have four children in the public schools, your tuition, that your real estate taxes you pay in a year, probably covers 2/3 or maximum one education of your child. But the thing is, you live in the community for 50, 60 years. Every year you pay that amount. So the first, for when your kids are in school, you're not paying all the tuition. The other taxpayers who might not have kids in the school, they're paying. But then when your kids graduate, you continue to pay. That's why it's actually quite affordable. Our community could adopt, that's not the only model, could easily adopt that model. If you look at, I think about the Bergenfield, Teaneck Bergenfield communities, and you just look at the numbers, and I have a rough sense of the numbers, it wouldn't entail the average family paying more than $15,000 to $20,000 a year, which is a fraction of the yeshiva tuition burden that people are faced with, even if you have two children, certainly three or four children, and more. But it would entail an understanding that your obligation, it's not a service you're paying for, it's that it's a communal obligation, and that whenever a person lives in the community, whether they do have children in the community at that time, whether they don't, whether, you know, unfortunately they're not blessed with children, whatever the situation is, you're part of a community. The community has an obligation to educate its children. Actually, there's enough money in the community. That's not an issue. The issue is, how do we look at our obligations at tzedakah? How do we look at our yeshivas? And again, there may be alternate funding models, slightly different than that, but it's not that there isn't enough money in our community. It's not averaged out over everybody to pay for our yeshivas for all of our kids. The money, plenty of money there. That's not the problem. The problem is a sense of an obligation to, as a community, an obligation of those who are more well-off giving more. That's what's lacking. That's a values crisis. And so whether or not you do it the way I'm suggesting, whether you do it in a different way, and obviously the problem is we as a community, we can't enforce these things, but we can educate people. We can talk about what are our values, what are our priorities. But you need to remember at the end of the day that it's not kochi ve'otzem yadi asa li'asa chayel hazeh, it's ki Hashem wanasen lecha koach lasos chayel. And when a person with Zocha, when they have the good fortune to make money, and especially if they're making a lot of money, if they're making any money, so the obligation of tzedakah is not because you feel good or it's a nice thing to do or you want to be a good person. The obligation to give tzedakah is because the money on some level isn't yours. It's a pikadon that was given to you by the Ribono Shel Olam, and when the Bala pikadon tells you, do the following, distribute the funds in the following way, you don't even think twice. So I think that as a community, we need to do a lot more talking about tzedakah, because it really is one of the central values, and it's one of the pillars on which our community has to rest. Good job.